all that cost?
Was that
all? No. 500. Oh, 500. Oh, okay. 50 or 500. It was, it's all the same.
It was the school. Adam. The school paid for it, though. So.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
they were wrong.
Yeah, we can start. I'm just going to do a little introduction just to start off. I'm sitting here this morning with my friend Joe Bowman, who's a World War II veteran living in the neighborhood I went to grade school, Manor Park. I've known Joe for quite a few years now, and we've been meaning to get together and talk about what Joe remembers from World War II and that time in history. So this posed a really good opportunity. So I'm sitting with Joe, and I guess we can start with what comes to the top of your head when you remember back to the war. Is there something that you that comes right away?
Misery. People suffering. Starvation in other countries, and the way the Germans were treating the people over in Europe when I was a kid. I couldn't stand the Germans going in and taking people out of their homes through the night and making soldiers out of kids that were 10 years old. And they'd take the mother, father, the father and the children and make soldiers out of them for the German army. This is just before they went into Poland. This is when I first got interested in the war.
What was the first time you heard about the war? When did you first hear about what was going on?
Didn't hear too much because radio was very weak at that time. Everything just was on the radio. There was no television or anything. It was just straight radio. But all the news that was on was out from Germany through England.
Mm. Do you notice a difference compared to today's coverage of conflicts to back then?
Oh, yes.
Do you think it's improved? Or?
Yeah, all they would tell you was that German soldiers are going in through the night and taking all the boys and fathers out of the houses and making soldiers out of them, putting them in camps to make German soldiers. And if they complained too much, they shot the mother. And this is what made me want to join up, to go over to help out.
Mm. And so when you joined up, what was the first thing you did in the army? Were you training over here, or did you?
No, when I first joined up, I came to London, Ontario, Wolseley Barracks, and I was there for 6 months for my training, and a lot of marching, marching, and just different military proceedings. Saluting and all that sort of thing, which is new to me. I was a farmer, and all I knew was a farmer.
That's something I wanted to kind of start with a bit, just so we get an idea of where you're coming from. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Park Hill, Ontario, on a farm just outside of Park Hill. And I went to a country school. Got as high as grade 4. Quit school when I was 12, and went to farm. My father had a very small farm, and money was scarce, so I went to work for another farmer for $13 a month, and my board to help father. I paid $10 to my father out of that to help pay the rent on the farm, so he could. I had brothers and sisters to look after too. So I was on the farm until I was 17. Then I went to work for a general store in Denfield, Ontario. And I was there until I joined the army. From 37 at the store until I joined the army in 1940.
So you came to this house after the war. Was that when?
Yeah, I came back from the war, I went back to the store where I took my training for the grocery store for a year. Then I came to London and purchased a store on Warncliffe Road. And I was there for 43 years.
Mm-hmm. And you lived above the store for a while, was that? Or when did you buy this house?
I bought this house in 1952. Okay. I bought the store in 1947.
Oh, okay.
I lived in the store from the time I bought the store until I bought the house.
Mm. That's good. That gives us an idea where you're coming from. What was the... now I guess we'll kind of jump back again to... What do you remember of the trip over to Europe from Canada?
I was all over Ontario, in Quebec, Ontario, near Quebec, and Nova Scotia, Valcartier, and I took most of my training in Ontario, but when I went overseas, that was 42. It took me 13 days on the boat to go across the ocean.
Wow.
Zigzagging with airplanes overseas to keep them.
The submarines?
U-boats
away from us.
Hmm.
Landed in England in 1942.
How big a zigzag? Like miles or did we?
Oh, miles.
Okay.
13 days to cross the ocean.
So when you arrived in England, where did you go and what did you do from there?
Well, all Canadian troops landed in Aldershot, England for training in England. That was in the south of England. And from there you took different trips through Europe, or through England, like route marches and that sort of thing.
Did you notice a difference in the training from what was from the training in London?
No, exactly the same. The English training was the same as ours.
Oh. So, guess what was the first time you were involved in a battle or in a conflict?
That was when I first got off the boat on the beach, the landing craft, that June the 6th, 1945.
That's in Normandy.
Normandy, yeah.
And you...
Juno Beach.
What was your feeling when you were arriving that day for when you were on the boats, on the landing crafts?
Excitement. Yeah. Excitement and worry.
Mm. They mixed together.
When I got off the boat, I was up to the chest in water. And you had to push bodies aside. As you went along, you kept with your elbows moving dead bodies aside so you could walk through to the beach.
Hmm.
So your landing, Joe, after the initial, like, were you further right into the battle? Had the battle been going on?
The first troops went in about, I think it was 5:30, and we got in about 10:30.
You were in at 10:30. Wow. So it had been going on for quite a while.
Yeah, it would have been about 5 hours, 4 or 5 hours. They'd already taken about a quarter of a mile of the beach.
Hmm.
So when we got to the beach, then we started heading for burnt-out trucks and tanks to hide behind for the bullets coming down from the top. You could hear them hitting the vehicles and whizzing by. See a little bump of dirt go up the boat. Shell was hitting the ground.
Wow. And what were you, a medic? Title?
Yeah, I had to carry my... When I went in the water, I had to carry my little medical kit up, out of the water so it wouldn't get wet.
Yeah.
I didn't have a rifle.
You didn't have a rifle?
No.
Wow.
I had a little red cross on my side, on my arm.
Now, how did you get to be a medic? Like, how were you a son?
I was in England for about 6 months, and I got a pain in the ankle. And they told me it was arthritis, and they were going to send me back to Canada. And I said I didn't want to go back to Canada. I came over here to fight the war. I wanted to stay there. And they said you'd have to join a non-combatant unit, which was either dental or medical.
Oh.
And I'd already taken stretcher training with the infantry, so I said, I'll take medical. I joined 15th Field Ambulance over in England. And I was there for about 4 months, and the doctor told me that I was doing a good job as a medic. He said, I'm going to send you to a hospital in London, England, take a training on medical. So I got my male nurses training in Bethesda Hospital in London, England.
Hmm.
And I was still left in the medical corps ambulance unit because they wanted somebody out that could go and somebody was stomach is shut off and their stomach is hanging out, they knew you knew how to fit them back into the proper places before you close them up and pad them over with the bandage.
Wow.
Are there, when you were at the hospital, are there injuries or medical issues that you remember dealing with a lot? Or that
I was in the operating room working on dead people. You had to open them up and find out where the cavities, where the different parts of the body fit in. So if the body parts of the body were hanging out over the side, you had to find the proper cavity that piece fit in, so before you close it up and tighten it up with the bandage and really tighten it up with the tourniquet.
So when you were on the beach that day, did you have to do that with...
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, what you did was check people who were bleeding quite freely and do them first. We let people bleeding less. And then once you get the blood stopped, you look for broken bones. People with bones out of place and try and straighten them out and find something to close, put them into a piece of board or something, what do you call it, splint?
Mm-hmm.
Splint up legs and arms and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then put them on a stretcher and send them back to the medical inspection room.
Oh. So you had a system kind of worked out to figure out, would you be looking for certain things as you were going through the beach?
You'd hear people hollering, people suffering from different things, but what you look for mostly was blood, running blood. You pack that and clamp that down so it stopped the bleeding.
And as the beach is being taken, do you see a lot of the actual attack on the beach from the
journey? You don't see anything, it's all sound. For the people were up on top of the hill, on the mountain sort of thing, and they were shooting down where we had to shoot up. So they were shooting down at us, but we couldn't see them. Mm-hmm. And they had holes dug in the rock where they could shoot out of the rocks.
Mm-hmm.
But the second day we were out of that, we were up on top. We got up on top, so it wasn't too bad.
And they were retreating at that point, or was it
they
as clear?
They were retreating, yeah. We were starting to gain ground.
So
the first day we'd been maybe about a mile up over the top of the hill.
Mm. So there was a kind of a point in time, was there a point in time where you felt like they were moving back, where the
No,
guns?
We never went back up.
No.
We kept going ahead.
Hmm.
things.
Was there aerial support too, Joe, on the attack? Right. Did you have aerial support too? Were there planes?
Oh, yes, we had aerial support. But they were there so crowded on the ground that they couldn't do too much.
Oh, like crowded with
like
the,
a lot of people in
with the Canadian soldiers?
To begin with. Mm-hmm. The trucks and tanks and trucks and ambulances. Mm-hmm. We just had, for ambulances, we just had the little jeeps with three bodies. There are three people.
Would you talk about the medals you received after and what they were for?
Oh, you got a medal for each country you worked in. Mm-hmm. Like every country you worked in, you got one for joining up without being forced in, like a volunteer medal.
Okay.
Every country you went into, you got a medal with. Hmm.
Would you, I remember last time you were talking about the tank that you went in. Would you talk about that?
That you got the
little.
Yeah, that one, that wasn't when I first went in, that was, I think that was in June, Sertogenbosch, in Holland. We went in cleaning up after a battle and heard someone up on top of a tank, and I looked up and couldn't see anybody, so I crawled up on the bank on the tank and went over to the turret and just looked down, saw a fellow in the turret. The turret had been blown off, and he couldn't talk. And I asked him what's wrong, and he was a German fellow, and he couldn't speak. So I looked down, and I saw that he had a shoe caught on some piece of metal. So I took my knife out and cut the shoelaces off so I could get out off the metal and pull them out. Took him over and dropped him down. By the time I got him down onto the ground, another fellow was looking out of the hole too, and he had a broken leg. So we got those two out before, and there's still smoke coming out of the tank. And the officer was hollering at me to get the hell down out of there. And I said, oh, somebody come up and help, I'd have been down long ago. he's going to court-martial me for not obeying an order. But
this was an ally?
I don't pay too much attention to that, for I didn't do anything that any man in the Canadian Army wouldn't have done if he'd been in my place.
Hmm.
It wasn't anything to be proud of. It was just that I happened to be in the right place at the right time. So I don't take any
credit?
I'm glad, yeah, I don't take any credit for it, but I did what I had to do, that was all. But as I said, they say any man in the Canadian Army would have done the same thing if he had been the same place.
But it was a German tank.
Yeah, that was our job. And when a person was sick or injured, didn't matter whether he was German or English or French or American or what he was, you took the worst one first. If the German was worse than the Canadian, you took the German clean, straightened him out before you did the Canadian.
Hmm.
That was the rule. Hmm. I couldn't drop a Canadian and leave the Canadian lay there. If he was really suffering, I'd tie something on his arm, stop the blood, before I'd go to get the German, but if the German was bleeding more, I'd cut the blood off the Canadian before I'd go to finish the German, just to save the blood from coming out.
So I guess, how many soldiers, do you have an idea how many people you worked with on D-Day? Or?
No idea. Thousands. Be thousands on that beach. Legion beach. No, not all Canadians on the beach.
No.
There are some Americans. And I think there's some English too.
And were you with a particular regiment or company?
Pardon?
As a medic, were you with a particular regiment or company?
Then? Yeah, I was with 4th Division Canadian Army.
Okay.
So once you take the beach, do you, you're saying you're going through Holland, how far do you go with the armies as they go through the continent?
No, I went right through from the first day in at the beach. I went right through to Wilhelmshaven, between Wilhelmshaven and, can't think of the last. The other side, I went right through Belgium, or France, Belgium, Holland, and Germany.
Hmm.
Went right through them all. Walcheren Island, Walcheren Island.
Do you, are there things that stick out for you from that time, from going through those countries?
Well, every battle was the same. Even after the battle was over, generally a battle was at night, and after in the morning you'd go and start cleaning up dead and wounded. The dead you'd just lay on the side of the road and put a blanket over them, and you'd look for the wounded. As I said, you'd look for the worst first. If somebody was yelling, then you'd holler and go to them. If they were yelling help, you figured they needed help. But most of them that were laying out on the ground, they weren't yelling, they were just waiting for somebody to come to help them out.
Was this some civilians too, or would you?
Oh yes, you treat a civilian just the same.
Mm.
They are all human.
Yeah. So when you were down the track, how much longer did you stay in Europe?
When the war finished in Europe, I volunteered for the Pacific. And before I got of Europe, then the war finished over in the Pacific. Being as I volunteered, they kept me on with the British Control Commission in England. And I was in Nuremberg trials for a while, looking after the medical inspection room in there in the jail.
Mm.
10 beds. If there wasn't any battle on, we'd work in a medical inspection room looking after the sick. You had 10 beds, 10 to 15 beds in a medical inspection room.
What do you remember from the Nuremberg trials?
I didn't see too much of them, for I was in the medical inspection room, but the odd time I'd run down to the hall and listen to what's going on, but by the time I got there, the big shots were all either dead or hanged or whatever they did to them.
What was the feeling there around the court cases? Was there a...
I think there's a different feeling for a soldier in the army, because you're taught a different thing. I mean, I don't know how to explain it, but everybody's different. It didn't matter what country you belonged to. They were your buddy.
Hmm.
Even the German. But they were good people. They were just like you and I, but they were taught different. like after the war finished, I'd go to German homes and have Sunday dinner. They'd feed me. I'd give them a couple cans of corned beef. They'd think they were God.
Because they couldn't get that at all.
But I didn't have any hard feelings against anybody, really.
How about the big shots?
The only person that I was mad at was Hitler. It wasn't the German people I was mad at. It was Hitler.
Hmm.
And I'd have shot him just as soon as I looked at him.
I guess, did you know what you were getting into when you signed up, I guess, to round this up? How much did you...
I had talked... See, that wasn't very long after the First World War. I was born 2 years after the First World War finished. And I got talking to a lot of people when I was a kid interested in war, you know.
Mm.
And I got talking to them, and they taught you what went on and how you acted and how you lived. So I had a good idea when I went in what I was going to be doing.
How old were you when you signed up?
19.
Do you remember what were the kind of stories that people would tell you about the First World War?
Oh, they'd tell you about airplanes. Airplanes was a thing that hadn't been in yet. They were just starting to come in when the war finished, the First World War. And they'd tell you about these airplanes flying over and dropping bombs and blowing people up. And when we were kids, if you heard an airplane coming, you run like hell for the barn, crawled under the hay in case they drop bombs on
You're kind of nervous about the airplanes.
if there's an airplane, if you could hear an airplane in the air, you didn't stay out in the open, you ran.
Wow. That's you hard. Said you first heard about the war, you were listening to the radio.
Yeah. I was coming home from, I was calling square dances up in Wingham. And we were coming back with the car with a fiddler player, and he had the radio on. That's where I first heard them talking about these soldiers going into houses and taking kids and men, putting them in trucks and taking them out and putting them in the army. And going to send them to Poland, I think it was at that time, when they first went to Poland. I thought that was the wrong thing to do. For they said if the wife complained about it, she was just shot and left there with the rest of the kids.
So you didn't know about the concentration camps and the exterminations?
No, no. I didn't hear about the concentration camps until the middle of the war. Nobody in Europe did. They didn't know what they were taking these people to Nuremberg, not in Nuremberg, the camps.
Auschwitz and...
Yeah, yeah. They just figured they were camps. They didn't know they're killing them.
Oh.
They didn't know that they were just... They'd go in 100 at a time in big bathrooms. And they said, it's going to have a bath. They'd put 100 people in there and turn the gas on. Take them out and pile them up like wood outside.
So you found out about that once you were over there?
Oh yeah, this is just about the time the war finished.
Mm.
See, they kept it so secret.
Right.
We didn't know about it until later on. In fact, I only knew one until the war finished.
Which one did you know about?
Can't think of the name.
Did you see any of them?
Yeah, I helped clean out two of them. Helped clean the dead out of them. Load them on the truck and put them in burials, mass graves. But they were just bone. They'd been piled out there for years.
Oh. So they would just leave the bodies out in the sun?
Yeah, they're in a barn. Sort of shed. Just piles them in like wood.
Wow. Yeah. And another thing you once told me was how you tried to get the matching body parts in each body bag, but when you went in on D-Day, you were healing the, or you were trying to help the wounded, not the dead. So when did you gather the dead up in the body bags?
That was, let's see, where's that was going right after the beginning of the war, right? In Caen, we had captured Caen, and the Germans run out of gas during the war in Caen, and the Germans were stealing the French horses and wagons, and on some of the roads were narrow, and they were running these horses and wagons up to the streets, and the Germans with the tanks, if the horse and buggy or horse and wagon was in the way, they wouldn't wait to get them out of the way. They'd run right over top of them. And I had the troops pick up three different wagons that had three different people on, and they were dug into the gravel, so you had to dig them out. And he had three bags, and I talked to the school kids that day. I woke up one night, standing on the road, looking at a crushed grave, or a crushed helmet with a German soldier's head in it.
Well, so the tanks ran right over their own people?
Oh, yeah.
The German tanks would run right over their own people driving horses.
Or driving a horse and wagon, yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah, they wouldn't wait. They wouldn't care.
So
you had to dig in and find it. You'd maybe find a hand, and you'd try and see if there's any sleeve under, and see what, and look to see the color or something. Try and throw it in the right bag so you get the part, the body part in the right bag.
My God. So you have nightmares still about those times?
The odd time. The odd time. But that was the worst of it. And that was after, I never mentioned that at school because I didn't think it would be right to mention the little kids. But I woke up about 3 weeks later, 2 or 3 weeks later, and I was standing on the road in Germany with that...
Hmm. So like came out through the dream because you didn't let it out with the kids.
Yeah, came out in my dream.
So how did you, some people came back and they were like shell shocked, they never got over the shock, and they were like, they never got out of hospital. How did you deal psychologically with yourself and the horrors that you saw?
I spent a week in the hospital. They were like, nervous breakdown, because when the war finished, I was right under heavy artillery, and it was bang, boom, and every time the gun would go off, the ground would shake. And then when the war finished, everything just quieted down. The second night, I couldn't sleep. And I started squealing and screaming. They put me in the hospital. And I was in there for a week. And they said when I first went in, when I was in the room, and if a nurse came in the door, they said I was under the bed as fast as I could. Just opening the door, I'd shoot under the bed next door.
Yeah.
But
trying to get rid of all those horrible memories. And the fear.
The fear. And I was only a week. That's surprising. For most of the people who were in there for longer than that. And then some of them never got over it. But they let me out, and I went home, and somebody had taken all the stuff out of my bag. I had nothing left, and didn't have any clothes or anything. I had a bunch of souvenirs that had picked up during the war, too. They were all gone.
What would a souvenir have been?
Badges off some dead soldier, German soldier.
Yeah.
Something he had in his pocket.
Right.
Something that wasn't any personal, nothing personal for his family. Hmm. Like we put in all his personal stuff in a bag and with his dog tags and sent them back. But another thing that you'd find something in a truck or something. Maybe a gun or something like that. I had a bag full of stuff. But no, after that, it never bothered me, never anymore. It never bothered me anymore. I never think of it.
Really?
I never think of it.
Did they give you counseling at the hospital?
Oh, yeah.
So that they knew how to try and get you out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they trained for must have been a month after that before they gave up on the everyday training.
Hmm.
And that was in England, Joe, the hospital?
Pardon?
Were you in England, the hospital?
No, that was in Germany.
That was in Germany.
In Wilhelmshaven.
Hmm.
That's where it was when the war finished.
Mm-hmm. I'm remembering now you talking about your brother. Would you?
No, he was killed in the invasion of Sicily. He never got to Sicily. The landing craft he was on was shot up before it landed in Sicily. And they were all drowned. They were from the RCRs here in London. There were 300 on the same ship. They were all drowned. That was the 25th of July, 1944. Memory's still a little bit...
Not at all, no.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And he's on the monument at Lurie.
Lurie, yeah.
Lurie. He's listed on the monument there.
Yeah, his name's on that. That was exactly the same as the one we had here before this one was built.
Yeah.
There were seven of them sent over in 1927 from Italy.
So did the government just buy the monuments?
Yeah.
So it wasn't a gift. It was something they purchased.
They were bought from Germany by the Canadian Army.
Yeah. And they're really... They're expensive.
Oh,
the monuments are more than you'd think.
Yeah. Oh, they're ivory.
Oh.
Not ivory, marble.
Marble. Marble. Oh. Huh.
Yeah, I got a piece of it out there. Yeah, an old one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. After it was vandalized.
Somebody broke the rifles off, and then they broke the leg off, then the head. When the leg was broken off, I started selling or collecting money for a new one at the store. I started that thing. I collected over $4,000 at the store for that.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Cost $37,000 to put it up.
And you collect that all privately here in Manor Park mostly. Wow.
Yeah.
Back then, that would be like way more money then even than now.
Yeah.
Now would be a lot, but that was really a lot.
And then after I started collecting, and the kids used to have roller skating, and they'd roller skate for money, and that all went to the collection for the monument. And then the Canadian Legion. I talked to the Canadian Legion. They started working with it. They were a big help.
Mm-hmm.
That new one was made down in Windsor.
Yeah.
In fact, the wax one that they made it from. It's still in the basement of the church.
Who is it?
Down under the entrance.
Oh, yeah? Wow.
So did they go out to, like, say, at Lurie, where another one was still in good shape, and make the wax and then fill it in Windsor? Where'd they get the wax?
I don't know where they got the people in Windsor.
How did
had got the wax from? In fact, they took the old one. They took the old one from here and took down there. They must have just fixed it up the same as it used to be. And then they made the wax model over it.
Wow.
Yeah. Do you have any more?
I think that's it.
Did you have any more, Teresa?
I'm trying to think. What haven't we asked you that people always ask you?
Pardon?
What do the kids always ask you? They always want to know if you were scared.
Yeah.
Oh, when you talk to the kids at the school.
Scared all the time.
You were scared all the time. Yeah.
I'm not afraid to admit it.
Maybe that's how come you could survive psychologically, as you were honest with yourself.
Yeah.
Scared, sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what else? Oh, they always want to know, like, you were a long time on those boats coming to D-Day, weren't you?
Yeah.
Were you days out there and you didn't get any supper? They couldn't feed you or something, or am I wrong about that?
Going into D-Day.
Yeah.
No, we got on. We were fed just the same as on meals.
Okay.
The boats fed the same meals as the infantry, but we were only on the boat going over for D-Day for about 16 hours. But when they had that, I forget what. The battle before that day, on the 24th of July, 1942, I was out in the middle of the canal, English Canal, or English Channel. There was a battle going on in France, but they didn't make it. They were all killed pretty well. Started with a K. There's two of them. There's one right beginning at the war and then one in 42. I was on the boat 3 days that day out in the middle of the ocean, in the middle of the channel, ready to go in, but they didn't make it in. They sent us all back off the boat, sent the boat back to England, unloaded us, went out to pick up the dead and wounded. What was that?
Out of the water.
I can't think of the name of the battle. There was two of them. They both started with K. The first one was a real thousands of killed. That was about the year after the war started in France.
So what would you do for 3 days sitting on a boat thinking you might, this might be it, you would maybe are going to die soon?
Play cards.
Or play cards? Yeah. Did you think
about...
You
never thought I was going to die.
You didn't?
No. I was prepared to... every day, every night when I went to bed, I was prepared to be, not to wake up in the morning.
So would you say a prayer, or how would you deal with that?
I prayed all the time.
Yeah.
You know, when you were heading to the beach, when you were going to Juneau Beach on the boats, did you guys know what you were going to do, or was it kind of a secret?
We know what we were going to do, but we didn't know where we were going.
Oh, you didn't know where? Okay.
No, we didn't know where. We knew that. There's a big battle on.
So when would they tell you that? When did they tell you that you were getting on this boat to go to a big battle?
When you got on.
After you got on.
After you got on, so you couldn't tell anybody before you got on. And nobody could use a phone or anything after you got on. Nobody knew anything except the people on that boat.
And where were you right before you got on the boats?
Right.
Where were you before you got on the boats?
We we were told we were going on a mission, like a route march, not only in a, not in a walk on trains and then get on the boat. Just a, I forget what you call it now. But every once in a while, they'd load you on the train, send you somewhere just
to practice.
Practice.
So you thought you were maybe just practicing
that
something.
Thought. Until you get on the boat and then they tell you the real thing. This is it.
Mm-hmm.
This is it. What you're waiting for. Be prepared.
Hmm. So it'd be kind of a shock to you.
No, you're ready for it all the time. You're always ready. You're always ready to go anywhere.
Hmm.
That's funny what the Army can do. How it can make you think.
How it can make you
think? You think different.
Huh.
You think different. Your mind isn't your own. You belong to the Army.
Really?
Huh. What they say is the law.
So it's almost like you become kind of a group,
think. Right. It's a family. You're like brothers and sisters.
Hmm.
You'd die for the fellow beside you. It's a feeling that you just can't explain.
Hmm.
I was wondering too, what was your when you were in Canada, how did you feel the politicians here and on the Allies were reacting to the Nazis? Has this changed over time?
How do you mean?
I guess did you feel the Canadian government was reacting the right way? Were they doing stuff?
Canadian government treated us good.
Hmm.
They treated us good. We never went hungry, never went without good clothes. They came to visit us all the time.
So I think what Adam is saying is, were you concerned with the politics of the Canadian government, like their dealings with Germany or with the United States or anything?
We never knew what was going on. We didn't know what was going on in the government. Like our government was the Canadian Army.
Mm-hmm.
Our government was the Canadian Army. That's all we cared for.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a different life.
So did they work at instilling that, or does that naturally what happens when you put a bunch of people together and you're facing death and you're working at something?
I think that's what it is. It's just that you're...
just natural. They didn't have to make you that way.
Oh, no. You naturally felt that. Once you joined the Army, you were Army. Everybody was your friend in the Army. You could ask the next door for anything. If he had two, he'd give you one.
Huh. That's why people will say, like, when you think back to the war, they'll say, it was the worst of times, it was the best of times. Like, they enjoyed it, even though it was difficult times.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed every day of the Army.
Huh.
As miserable as it was. even when you'd be working with the sick and the dead. It was a job. It was a job to do.
Hmm.
Like I've held many a person knowing that they're dying and say, well, just a minute, doctor will be here with a needle in a minute and you'd have him in your arm and he'd be talking away and all of a sudden he's gone.
Hmm.
Nothing to it. You just lay them out, get the records straightened out on them, wrap them in the blanket, put them out for the ambulance to pick up. Thousands of people.
That you held.
Yeah. And just before the when I had the store, this fellow got, had an apartment behind me, and when he came in, he said, he said, I know you. I said, well, I don't know you. And he said, where, did you ever live in Stratford? And I said, no. Did you ever go to Western University? And I said, no. Nice little country school. And he couldn't figure it out. He said, I know you. He was living in my apartment. And we were sitting in the back. He was in the back of the store one time, two or three is talking, somebody brought up the war. And they said something about, igloo. And he looked at the fellow and he said, were you an igloo? And he said, yeah, he said, I was an igloo. He said, so was I. And he said, did you, Joe, you were in the army? And I said, oh, I was in the army. Were you ever in igloo? I said, no. I said, I've been in igloo. I said, I was in East igloo. I said, a little place there where we had the ambulance. I said, I cleared up all the battles in igloo where you were. He said, we're in the medical corps? And I said, yeah. Hmm. He said, you bugger. He said, you're the man that fixed my arm.
Oh!
Wow. Wow.
And he remembered you, but couldn't remember from
couldn't
where.
Remember where.
Wow.
He said, I remember you. And he took his arm. He said, the arm is broken here. And it had been back this way. So I remembered.
Wow.
He said, you said, no, I'm going to hurt you. And he said, he said, you could talk better than any doctor I ever talked to.
Huh.
And he said, you just told me it was going to hurt a little bit. He said, you gave me a pill. And you said, my arm was back this way. And he said, oh, this is going to hurt. But he said, there's a piece of flesh there that's got to be put over the bone. So he said, I said, oh. He said, it took all a bit down. And he said, no, this is going to hurt too. And he said, you took the piece of flesh, put it across. And he said, no, got the bandage up, bandaged it up. And he said, no, this is going to hurt too. So he said, he gave it a pull. And it went back in the face.
Ooh, you were brave, Joe. Ooh.
And he said, then you gave me a needle. And there was no more pain. He said, I knew your face.
Wow.
Wow. And he rented your apartment that you had over the store.
Beside the store, yeah.
Beside the store.
Yeah. He died about 3 years ago.
Hmm.
Yeah. That's the only person I ever saw that said I treated them.
Hmm.
Out of the thousands.
Hmm. So those people that had their organs and everything out of their body, would they survive, do you think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they'd survive. Because the cavity was there, and the body was just all opened up. And you had to know where the cavity was, fit each one back in its place, and then you'd bring the skin up over and tighten it up, and put a bandage around and then wrap it tight, put them down.
About infection, though?
Well, they clean it up when it's got back to medical inspection. See, when I'd finished with them, put them on the stretcher on the ambulance, send it back to the medical inspection room. They'd do the same thing. They'd take all that bandage off, clean it up, sterilize it, send it back to the general hospital. And then they'd be there until they're cleaned up, all finished up.
Wow.
So you transport, like, the injured from the field.
Yeah, my job is to get them off the field. Get them cleaned up first.
Right.
Get the bandage on, get the blood stopped, and get the bone back into the right place.
And then you get him on a jeep or something to take him away from the bad.
Had jeep ambulances that take three ambulances.
Oh, okay.
Like a jeep would take three ambulances,
patients.
It's stretchers.
Okay.
You get three stretchers and one sitting ambulance, one sitting wounded.
So did they shoot at you with, like, when you landed on D-Day and you had your red thing on your arm, would the Germans or the enemy try not to shoot you because you were a medic?
They were supposed to.
But some of you got shot.
See, under the Geneva Convention, that was every man in the army was supposed to honor that Red Cross. But a Red Cross boat that big around, you couldn't see it too far away. You couldn't see it.
They didn't want to give you anything bigger, I guess. Like one on your back?
Make a target.
Oh, maybe.
Make a target.
Yeah.
And did you ever watch the show MASH? Because it was about that, like about the medic in the field in Vietnam, right? That show MASH?
MASH, no.
No. I just wondered if that would be enjoyable to you or kind of like, no, I've done enough of that. I don't want to see that.
So how many days were you on the beach, Joe?
Pardon?
How many days were you on the beach?
Just one half, about a half a day.
Half a day from when you landed at 10.
I got on about 10 and about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We got close enough to start climbing up.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you'd taken all the wounded.
We cleaned all the wounded and dead off the beach by that time. The dead are still down there, but they were stretched out in blankets with their names on the toes.
Oh. That you'd get off their dog tag.
Yeah. Like I'd have one of the dog tags and the other one would be on the body.
Oh, so you could know for sure that they were dead.
Yeah.
That's why you have two.
That's why I had two. I'd give it to the Graves Commission. Like I'd give it to the Graves Commission and they match it up with the body when it come into the wherever they go to. A red one and a green one. I kept the red one.
So those bodies wouldn't have got back to Canada. They would be buried over there.
Yeah, buried over there. Now they bring them over here. Like now they bring them over here. But you can't, if you imagine the thousands of people that did, how would it cost to bring them back?
Yeah. Have you been back over?
No. I often thought I should have gone back to see my brother, but I didn't go back.
Gone back to see who?
My brother.
Oh, his grave is over there.
Yeah, in Sicily. Sicily. Thought it'd do more good, more harm than good.
To you?
Yeah.
Yeah. You were close to your brother?
Yeah.
How many years apart were you?
2 years.
Oh, yeah.
Year and 18 months.
He was older or younger?
Younger.
Well, you got enough there.
Yeah, thank you so much,
Joe. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you.
Yeah.